You can't beat the sound of a contented cat. That's why veterinary surgeon and natural pet food pioneer John Burns developed Burns Pet Nutrition. Because he knows the positive impact a natural diet has on our beloved pets. And our premium cat food is designed to satisfy even the most finicky eaters. For natural, no nasty, wholesome recipes, choose Burns Pet Nutrition. Available from veterinary clinics and all good pet shops across Ireland.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Declare Minister Simon Harris TD elected as the new leader of Fine Gael.
Simon Harris has been elected Fine Gael leader. He replaces Leo Varadkar, a Taoiseach who was very unpopular with unionists.
Well, I think the Taoiseach's intervention was unhelpful. Frankly, these are matters for the government of the United Kingdom. They are matters for the internal affairs of the United Kingdom. And therefore, when the Irish government talk about the need to prepare for a Plan B, I think they should focus on getting Plan A sorted out.
Who's Simon Harris? What does his election mean for Northern Ireland? And what does he mean by taking back the flag?
We stand for streets that are safe and crime that is never allowed to go unchecked. And in a week where I saw the tricolour of this republic draped over the coffin of a Garda killer, I say shame. Let's take our flag back. Take it back. Take our flag back.
Also, Sinn Féin is under pressure from the left. And from the right. At least on the streets.
Mary Lou, you're a traitor. Mary Lou, you're a traitor, you are.
But will it affect them electorally?
The decision of who is in government must be placed in the hands of the people. And today's announcement can have only one conclusion, the calling of a general election.
I'll be joined by Belfast Telegraph reporter Andrew Madden. I'll also hear from Hugh O'Connell, the deputy political editor with the Irish Independent. But first, I asked Bray People reporter Tom Galvin about Simon Harris, the person. Tom Galvin, what can you tell us about Simon Harris, the person, his background? Who is he?
Simon, well, he's hugely popular in Greystones. He grew up there, went to school there. He went to the same school as I did, actually, St. David's Secondary School in Greystones, great school. He's one of these sort of omnipotent, ubiquitous sort of characters that he's everywhere at once around the town, and he always seems to get involved in everything, you know. I was out there on Friday around the town at a retirement coffee morning, and I couldn't get a bad word from anyone about him. They all seem to know him, or at least to have this sort of sense that they know him. They've all shaken his hand at everything from sod turnings in Enniskerry there a while ago to, your basic coffee mornings. He goes down to that kind of retirement coffee morning on a Friday. So he's hugely popular. Anyone you ask, they've all met him around the town. I mean, it's kind of unusual, actually. I took a walk around and went into the bookshop, the children's bookshop, and the lady there had got a card from him with the stamp on it when she was shortlisted last year for the book awards, which she subsequently won. And, you know, across the way in the wine bar, you know, his card was there at the back set tape to the wall. You go down the road to the cafes and they love him. And I mean, the stories go back. It goes back to when he was a kid, he wrote a play and performed it locally in the town and packed out a hall for five nights in a row. A fairly dark play, actually, called On the Run, which tackled kind of themes like alcoholism, child abuse, death, that kind of thing. But he sold out for five nights and he got the backing of Bernard Farrell, the Abbey playwright. So, yeah, I think one person said he's going to be president, maybe jumping the gun a bit, but that's how confident people are in the town.
That was Tom Galvin, a reporter with the Bray People. Listening to that, I have Andrew Madden. Andrew, you're very welcome to the studio once again.
Thanks for having me.
Simon Harris, leader of Fine Gael, soon to be Taoiseach.
Yes, indeed. The youngest Taoiseach has been at age 37.
Do we know anything about him in terms of Northern Ireland? He doesn't say. Gregory Campbell came up with a great line, and he does quite often.
Yeah.
Simon who?
Exactly. That's it. He's kind of an unknown quantity up here. I mean, he has, you know, spoke about Northern Ireland here and there in his various cabinet roles. He pushed through a decision to fund medical school places for students from here. And he also drew up a memorandum of understanding with the health minister back during the pandemic when he was the health minister in the Republic as well. But in terms of him being front and centre in Northern Ireland, not really. We don't know an awful lot about him. And it's actually interesting that in his victory speech, shall we call it, at the weekend there, when he was confirmed as Taoiseach, he didn't actually mention Northern Ireland once.
Which is not surprising in a way, but would seem to differentiate him from Leo Varadkar, because Leo Varadkar, and I wouldn't have predicted this, became, and I don't want to exaggerate, a kind of a hate figure for unionism.
He did. And this kind of really all stems from during the Brexit negotiations and that whole saga a number of years ago, whenever he held up the picture of a bombed border post taken during the Troubles, of course, to kind of highlight what could go wrong with a hard Brexit if there was a border on the island of Ireland. And this was seen as, you know, scaremongering when it came to unionists. So, no, he's been seen as kind of what, somewhat of a unionist bogeyman, Varadkar. So in that sense, I suppose you could say in that sense that Simon Harris kind of by default is more palatable to unionists because he's not Leo Varadkar.
Before we go on, let's listen to a clip I have from Hugh O'Connell. Now, he's the deputy political editor with the Irish Independent. And this is Hugh speaking about Simon Harris, the politician. Mm-hmm.
I think what's really interesting is that the path he has gone down is very similar to that of Leo Varadkar's in many respects. Ambitious young minister who has always had designs on high office. They share very similar character traits. They're ambitious, highly intelligent, analytical, deeply political. They're media savvy. They're both seen as great communicators with the general public. They are both seen, or Varadkar once upon a time was seen as someone who could broaden Fine Gael's appeal. And that's a view, I think, articulated by a number of Fine Gael TDs and senators who wrote in behind Simon Harris, that he can broaden the party's appeal. But his path to high office began, I guess, in 2009 when he was elected as a county councillor in Wicklow. Within 2 years, he was the youngest TD in the Dáil when he was elected in 2011 when Fine Gael won a landslide 77 seats. And he established himself very, very early on as a savvy media communicator. He was made a junior minister by Enda Kenny in a reshuffle in 2014 in the Department of Finance. And within 2 years, at the age of 29, he became Minister for Health in a really surprise move by Enda Kenny upon his re-election as Taoiseach. No one expected that he would appoint Simon Harris to the poison chalice that can be the Department of Health, but he did because he rated Harris. In 2017, Simon Harris threw his weight behind Simon Coveney for the Fine Gael leadership. This was a rare misstep, I think, by Simon Harris. He was the only member of the cabinet to publicly endorse Simon Coveney for the leadership. And it was clear very early on that Leo Varadkar had the majority of the parliamentary party well behind him, including senior members of the cabinet. And so it was a fait accompli. There was a campaign, there was hustings, but really it was a bit of a charade. But again, you see the similarities with Varadkar Harris. It has become a fait accompli that Harris is going to be the next leader of Fine Gael, just as it was the case for Leo Varadkar 7 years ago.
Ideologically, he does seem to be coming across as quite conservative. Mm-hmm. I mean, more a classic Fine Gael person in terms of, he says he's going to, it's for the farmers, for law and order. These are classic Fine Gael themes. Whereas Leo Varadkar had, perhaps unintentionally, as someone who is gay, someone as a person of colour, seemed to despite the fact he was rather, I suppose, Thatcherite in his politics, he seemed to give the impression of leading Fine Gael to a very centrist, progressive place, where Simon Harris seems to be pitching himself to bring it back to a more classical Fine Gael stance.
Yeah, well, traditionally, you know, Fine Gael are seen as a centre-right party, and you have to remember that Simon Harris is very much a party man. I mean, he was canvassing for the party when he was just 15 years old, and then he first became a councillor when he was 24, and he's been in the Dáil since he was since 2011. So he's very much known from the grassroots of the party on up, and he does come across as a bit more conservative and a more traditional kind of Fine Gael man than Varadkar did. Yeah,
it is interesting, but I mean, I'm sort of pigeonholing him as a conservative, taking up what he's been talking about, law and order and farmers, etc. Now, there does seem to be a bit of warmth there in terms of the commentariat.
Yeah, I think that's really because Simon Harris is kind of seen as an uncontroversial figure. Yeah. You know, he doesn't really rock the boat or make, you know, fiery speeches, you know, attacking people as such. So yeah, he seems quite uncontroversial.
Finan Sheehan has described Simon Harris's ideology as a blank canvas. You could take that the both ways, I suppose.
No, yeah, that's it.
Senan Maloney has described him as having no baggage and a clean slate. So kind of a doer, perhaps, rather than an ideologue. So we, despite the fact he's been in politics for a long time, he's been a minister for quite a while, we still really don't know where he's going to be in terms of the wider picture when he's in charge and what direction he's going to take his party in.
Yeah, we don't. He hasn't really set down any major kind of policy issues he's going to push forward. I mean, he's speaking in very kind of general terms when he made a speech there the weekend. You know, as you say, party of law and order, here for the farmers, we need sensible migration strategy, immigration strategy rather. But yeah, he hasn't really laid down a marker in terms of where he stands.
But he says he's going to take back the flag, Andrew. He's going to take back the flag.
That's true, yeah.
People may be wondering north of the border
what exactly he means by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not even sure if he knew what he meant by that, to be honest. It just sounded like a good line.
Well, it was a great line, let's be honest. But he was talking about the Pierce McCauley.
The Pierce McCauley thing, yeah.
I think he was trying to imply that Sinn Féin had something to do with putting a tricolour on the Pierce McCauley, who had been convicted not only of stabbing his wife 13 times, who later became a Sinn Féin TD, but also of the murder of a Garda.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any suggestion that Sinn Féin had anything to do with placing that flag.
No, there's not. But as you say, reading between the lines, some people might have got that impression from what he said, yeah. Because he did take a dig at Sinn Féin later on in the speech, which Fine Gael representatives are wont to do.
Those are the two biggest parties. There's a history there.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, he needs to claw back support. So that's hardly surprising. But
I suppose,
in context of the flag, that the Irish tricolour, in terms of Fine Gael and other parties, they come to associate, it's obviously the flag of the state.
Yeah.
But it has always been associated also or with republicanism. So there's a competition there, I suppose.
Yeah, there is. Well, yeah, all the main parties south of the border are ostensibly pro-unity, some more vocally than others. But yeah, so each of them kind of wants to take the flag for their own, as opposed to sharing it as such.
But I can't see Simon Harris leading the charge for a border poll. We don't know yet, but I can't see it.
No. Well, he has spoken about it a few times in the past. I think was it 2022? The latest census came out, and it showed, you know, that there are now more Catholics than Protestants in the north. You know, he said that, you know, talk of a border poll is for another day, and that was about it. And then I think the previous year, he said it was too early to set a time frame for a border poll, but he does strongly believe in a united Ireland. But yeah, he won't be clamouring for a border poll anytime soon, for various reasons, not least one of them because that's exactly what Sinn Féin wants.
Moving on to Sinn Féin, and this is an entirely different subject. Ireland in general, including Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, are generally much more supportive of the Palestinian cause, and we've spoken about this before, than many politicians across mainstream
politics
in Europe. Leo Varadkar has, for example, stood beside President Biden and has, I suppose, spoke about the Palestinian-Israeli situation in a way that, well, Joe Biden wouldn't have been used to.
Yeah.
And yet, in Ireland, Leo Varadkar is a centre-right politician. Now, but Sinn Féin are under an awful lot of flack from this. And if I'm just going to listen to a clip, this is Sinn Féin councillor Cliona Ní Bhreanar attempting to speak at a pro-Palestinian rally. There's quite a bit of pressure on Sinn Féin from the left here.
There is indeed, definitely. They've long been seen as being, you know, in solidarity with the Palestinian people, and they kind of found themselves in a rock and a hard place. I mean, because there's a, you know, there's a general election coming up, and they're keen not to lose any potential voters, but then it all kind of came to the head, you know, with the visit to Washington for St. Paddy's Day, and a lot of the grassroots, you know, felt that there's no way should they have went and shook hands and had Guinness with, you know, Joe Biden. You know, Sinn Féin in response to that said, no, we're going to go to call him out on perceived support for Israel. But it didn't go down like that. So they find themselves in a tricky position.
Tricky position, but do you think the people who are booing and heckling, and people before Profit deny that, I should say, and that has been corroborated by others, who were present. To what extent is this criticism and is this discontentment internal to Sinn Féin, or is this Sinn Féin's traditional rivals and enemies, I suppose, in their own constituency? Do you think this has done real damage to Sinn Féin?
It appears like it has more than actually has. I mean, if you look, you know, on social media and all the amount of times they've been attacked over this, ostensibly by some of their own supporters as well. But I think when it comes down to it, you know, on polling day, voters aren't going to be swayed by their stance in Gaza or their actions regarding the current conflict in the Middle East. I mean, at the end of the day, most people vote based on bread and butter issues, not kind of issues like this. So I don't think it's really harmed them in the long run. It has been used, you know, by various other parties and opponents to kind of batter them with, but I don't think it's going to have any long-lasting effect.
There seems to be constantly some sort of disconnect between the politics of protest and the politics of social media and the politics, I suppose, of you know, a type of on-the-ground organising, which is very democratic, which is very necessary, but it never seems to blossom into something electorally.
No, it doesn't, because, I mean, Sinn Féin are known for having a huge kind of grassroots engine behind them. That's even apparent on social media, and it's apparent when it comes to canvassing prior to elections. But as you say, whether that blossoms into something electoral is a different story. I mean, it doesn't really matter how many... Well, it does matter to a degree, but it doesn't matter in polling to how many members your party has. It matters how many votes you get. And those things don't obviously correlate all the time.
Now, Sinn Féin are getting heckled from the left, and they're also getting heckled from the right. If we can listen to this clip.
Mary Lou, can we have a comment about the migrant situation? Hello, Mary Lou. What is it? Would you have a comment about the migrant situation, the people with no passports coming in?
Out you go, Mary Lou.
Mary Lou?
Mary Lou, you're a traitor. Mary Lou, you're a traitor, you are.
Just a comment, Mary Lou, about the...
Angus Snoddy has also been confronted on the street in recent weeks.
Yeah.
Now, this is a new thing.
It is, yeah. I suppose it all really kicked off last year, whenever there was the riots after... migrant was allegedly involved in a very high-profile crime, and then there was rioting on the streets of Dublin, buses burnt out and all the rest of it. And then this has kind of snowballed ever since then, and it has rumbled on. You know, we've had, south of the border, we've had properties that were, you know, housing asylum seekers being burnt down and attacked, and protests. Quite a few public representatives have been publicly heckled. So, yeah, Sinn Féin are getting on both sides of this, the plan to tackle.
It's not just them. It's not just
no,
them.
No, it's not just them at all. No, no.
But there is a, I mean, there's something that this element is focusing on Sinn Féin.
Yeah, we're supposed to agree that's because everyone, you know, sees them coming out on top in the next election down south. And with that, you know, the... You know, certain sections of the electorate will be searching for answers to a whole host of problems. One of them is their perceived issues with immigration. Yeah,
there are many politicians, and we see this across, you know, across the spectrum and everywhere. But it's politics in the south, and even politics here in the north. And I know this is strange talking about in the context of the Troubles, but there has been some civility to an extent. Now, I understand that even politicians have been murdered, but in general, there has been a degree of civility, even here in the North, and certainly in the South. You know, a politician could have went about their business if they went for a pint, but there's something changed now. People screaming in your face. It's the politics of screaming traitor.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting point. Yeah, because even as bad as things might have been in years gone by, it's never really gotten to that stage where politicians, have people coming up to them and essentially, threatening to a degree and shouting, hurling insults and whatnot. Or we've even seen south of the border, protests outside the homes of politicians. But it is, and I think a part of it as well is kind of fueled by social media, because while these things are happening, sometimes they're being live streamed and they're being shared and they're being given kind of a lot more attention because of the rise of social media.
Anytime I use the term far right, I get people from various backgrounds complaining, about far right. But I think I can say, and I don't think there's an awful lot of high ideology involved in screaming traitor, traitor, traitor in people's faces. But I think I can say, in terms of political science, that's behaviour we would associate with the far right.
It is, yeah.
But despite the fact that these protests are quite prolific, there is a campaign, there has been a campaign of arson. Mm-hmm. Will we see anything electorally?
I don't think so, honestly. I mean, it can appear that these things are larger and the sentiment is stronger than it actually is because of various factors, because, a relatively small group of people can cause a disproportionate amount of noise, especially with issues like this. And as I mentioned previously, when it gets down to it, even if it's all people talk about day and night, when it gets down to it in the ballot box, they care about their bread and butter issues, care about healthcare, police and justice, those kind of things, street cleanliness, all out there. They don't really vote on, I don't think, based on these kind of issues.
But might that change?
It's possible that, it will sway a few more people than it did previously, but I don't think it's going to sway enough to change the political landscape by any stretch of the imagination.
Changing the subject entirely, and I know you're excited about this one.
Of course.
There's a new East-West structure. Tell us about that.
This is groundbreaking. I mean, it has the potential to change everything on these islands. And no. Yeah, the East-West Council, it's been set up under the Safeguarding the Union deal, which saw the restoration of Stormont. Now, essentially, it's just a vehicle where politicians from Stormont can meet with politicians from London and talk about increasing or improving connectivity and boosting trade across the Irish Sea. But I think it's safe to say that there is the high probability they'll just end up like a talking shop with a few meetings each year. A lot of talking, but not a lot of follow through. But we'll see. I mean, I'm being cynical, but yeah, I just can't see what's going to come from it.
But how long now? How long? Do we not have one of these already?
Well, under the Good Friday Agreement, we've got the British-Irish Council. Well, that's between the Irish government and the British government. And we've also got, the North-South part of it as well. The North-South strand of the Good Friday Agreement, that is. So this is a wee bit different than that, but it's kind of the same idea, yeah.
And you don't expect much to come of it, but again, you might be wrong.
I could be wrong, yeah. But if you look at these kind of these councils and these committees and all that are set up, if the past shows anything, they don't do much. I mean, the North-South Ministerial Council, which is supposed to meet quite regularly, hasn't met in quite a while. So and that's been in place since 1998. And I couldn't tell you what's came of it since 1998, to be honest with you. I'm not saying it's useless, but yeah, it's not going to...
Well, the DUP they're talking it up.
Well, of course they are, because it was part of the deal that Sir David Johnson negotiated, and they're not going to say, we know this is a talking shop, and look what we got.
Andrew Madden, thank you very much. This episode of The Bell Tale was produced by myself, Kieran Dunbar, sound designed by Graham Davidson. Clips from RTE, UTV, BBC and Sky.
You can't beat the sound of a contented cat. That's why veterinary surgeon and natural pet food pioneer John Burns developed Burns Pet Nutrition. Because he knows the positive impact a natural diet has on our beloved pets. And our premium cat food is designed to satisfy even the most finicky eaters. For natural, no nasty, wholesome recipes, choose Burns Pet Nutrition. Available from veterinary clinics and all good pet shops across Ireland.